Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
On tonight's episode of Sanity Lounge, the boys welcome local rhythm devil Mitch Shavitz into the lounge. Since 1985, Mitch has been melting local faces off in at least 11 bands while working in various studios and being a live sound engineer for local talent as well as major acts, including George Clinton and John Sebastian. Join us as we go through Mitch's rich history with drums, movies, and Baltimore in another fun episode of Sanity Lounge. Be sure to stick around after the interview featuring Mitch on the Skins, live in the lounge. Okay, welcome to Sanity Lounge.
Welcome.
We have a special guest tonight. A friend of mine, Mitch Shavitz.
It's Shavitz, actually.
Mitch Shavitz.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, well,
it's cool. Everybody gets it wrong.
So I feel like I know a Shavitz, and maybe that's why I said
maybe.
That.
It's
not Shavitz.
Shavitz. Yeah. Mitch Shavitz.
The I is silent.
Interesting. Okay,
don't know why.
You see, we learn stuff at Sanity Lounge all the time.
We're so meeting for the first time. Yeah.
Yes.
So it's wonderful to meet you. Yep. I am not a drummer, just for the record.
Right.
So you have more brain cells than we do.
Exactly.
Oh, right. Woe's whole thing is artistry, sculpting, painting, and stuff like that, which is why, he's a lunatic who pays attention to rhythms in a different way than drummers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But
sculpting.
But Mitch has been around for a long time, and I know Mitch because I'm in the 80s cover band Making Waves, and Mitch was in a band that used to share, like, we would be on the same bill. They'd play shows. We'd play shows. So I've known Mitch for about 10 years now.
Have you ever filled in with Making Waves? Have you ever played with them?
Actually, we have. We did one New Year's Eve. We had, a combo between both bands.
That was a great night.
That was fun.
That was a great night.
So much fun.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Did you guys, you shared a kit. You didn't do a drum off.
No. We were going to do that. So I also, it's on there, but I also play percussion.
Yeah.
And that's a whole nother story. We can get to that.
We will get to that.
But I, was playing percussion. So instead of doing back and forth, we're like, I'll just bring my percussion out. And I just fill
it
in.
Yeah, he's got the setup, kind of like Wheel. The nice... And he's good. Like, you do gigs. We will get to it. But he does gigs as a percussionist as well as a drummer.
So, for the people who don't know, what's the difference?
Good question. Usually, well, go ahead.
Even though it's all percussion, right?
Right, technically. Yeah.
So the drums are the drum kit, right? And percussion usually is the congas and the timbales and the shakers and the tambourines and all that goofy sound.
Cowbell.
Stuff. Cowbell. Definitely cowbell.
Right.
And, and you just fill it in. You don't go nuts. You just kind of fill in that hole and just kind of add a little more icing to
it's a little sauce on top of the pasta. Like, remember Ciro from the Trey band? Remember that guy Ciro? He's he's got all kinds of nutty stuff. So that's it.
As I said, I'm not a drummer, but I am a massive fan of drumming and music in general.
Yeah, and actually, it's a good question for the people home who don't know, because I can hear people being like, what's the difference?
Are you a soloist? Like, I love a good drum solo, but some of the drummers we talk to don't like doing drum solos.
I was in high school because I wanted to be cool.
It's like you're either, it seems anyway, in my experience, you're either a groover and a chaser of a real groove feel, or you're a chaser of the ultimate drum solo.
Right.
And so just depending on what your pedigree was, what you kind of grew up obsessing over, that's where you land with whether or not you're that guy.
We can start there. Let's delve into your origin story.
So
was drums your first instrument?
It was. It was just one day out of the blue. Don't even know why, but I just turned to mom and dad. I said, Dad, Mom, I want to play drums. I was in like sixth, seventh grade around there. And they're like, why? I don't know. Something just hit me. No clue what hit me, but it just happened.
The call of the drum.
Yeah.
I'm serious.
Right. It could be go ahead. Right. So, called up when I was going to public school, and the teacher said, well, he's not ready for band yet. Yeah, we get him some private lessons. So I took my private lessons with this awesome old school jazz teacher.
Wow, that's good.
Super old school. And it's funny, I first went in there to take lessons with him, and he sits me down. He goes, so who are your favorite drummers? And at the time, I was like huge in the Kiss. Nice. I'm like, Peter Criss, he's awesome. Fantastic. And he looked at me and goes, he sucks. He's a joke.
You're saying, oh.
I'm like, what?
He said, oh, God.
That's are you sure?
Right.
He said, no. Kiss.
I disagree.
Peter Criss.
Right. Yeah, he goes, no. He's a joke. And I'm like, holy shit. I'm like, what the heck? So for the first few months, he had the little practice pad drum kit. Well, I got over it. I was like, okay, maybe he knows what he's talking about, sure. Right? And, I didn't know. He had pictures of Louis Belson and Buddy Rich and Gene Krupa up there. And I'm like, I had no clue who they were, really.
Right.
So he had stacks of Modern Drummer magazines. So when I waited for him, I'd always thumb through them. And then he gives me a book. And I'm like, cool, get to play on the drums. Nope, snare drum.
Good for him.
Right?
Good teacher.
And he wrote on the first page of the book, he wrote two things. He wrote, practice 8 days a week and 27 hours a day.
Nice.
So he was always telling you to keep going more.
Right.
And that's what I did.
Well, I got to tell you, it shows he's a really good rudimental drummer. Like you have real great controls of your rudiments.
Thank you.
Yeah, it definitely shows that you're a lifer.
What style? Of drummer would you consider yourself?
I was a kid, I was in the Kiss and then Rush, and of course I had a big monster drum. You go through those phases, right? But even when I was taking lessons from him, the first thing I saw, he had a Modern Drummer magazine and on the cover was Billy Cobham.
Oh gosh.
Right? He's so awesome, right?
And Mahavishnu
Orchestra.
He's solo stuff, Mahavishnu. He's played with Miles Davis. Mm-hmm. He played with Dead and Company.
Yeah,
the great guys.
Yeah,
he's the real deal.
Yeah,
and I met him a few years ago at a show he just did. Nicest guy ever.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So I saw him on the cover, and it was his Tama 3 bass drum.
Yeah, he had a huge set kit. before Alex Van Halen, he had a serious drum set.
He had three different kicks, different sizes. He had kick drums mounted behind him before we started getting
and
to the
lightning.
Lightning fast. Right. And he played open-handed, which is when instead of crossing over, you're using your left hand to play the hi-hat, not your right.
Okay.
So the theory is, I read an article about him, but the theory is that why should I cross over if I could just play this way? I could get around faster. And he did it.
Right.
So
is that not a common thing?
Well, it is. Some drummers could do it.
Right.
One of my all-time favorite drummers is Simon Phillips.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So these guys are open-handed players.
Right.
And when I'm at gigs and I'm kind of bored and it's a slow song,
sure,
I'll play open-handed.
Okay.
Right. Just to practice.
Yeah.
I'm bored. I'm just going to go open-handed. I've done a few gigs where I knew I'm not going to say the band, but I knew it was going to be a boring gig.
Right.
So I purposely put my ride cymbal on my left side.
Good for you.
So I just the whole night, I had forced myself.
I've played gigs like that.
That was a clue, by the way.
I've played gigs like that. We don't get into politics.
If he puts his on the left.
Right. That means he's bored. Right.
So going back, I saw this picture and I said to my drum instructor, I'm like, what's the deal with all the bass drums? And he jokingly said, oh, he can't count. Just as a joke, right?
Right?
And I'm thumbing through it again. I see, hey, he's got an album out. So I go to the library and I find Billy Cobham Warning. And I just wore the shit out of that record. I had to go out and buy it. Yeah, I mean, I used to play along to some of the songs. Wow. I mean, as hard as it was, I used to. And this guy was just freaking amazing.
He was amazing. After this, check out
Billy Cobham's Spectrum album.
Yep.
That's a classic, even though it's a drummer's album, classic funk, fusion.
Yeah, I would say it's like prog fusion.
Yeah,
funk.
It's now, awesome. Is it instrumental?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
no, I'll definitely check.
And it's
that
like
out,
the though. Whole B sides, like two songs, right. And yeah. Like the first side six, and it's yeah, it's you know, nasty. That doesn't bother me.
Yeah, and the guys, there's only four guys on the album.
Cobham's an underrated. That's a great. He's great, you know, yeah. So, inspiration.
So I was into rock and pop and all that because it was the 80s and listen to crap. But then I was like, holy shit.
And now, what age are you still?
I was like 12, 13 when I started this. Right, 14. I'm starting to,
right.
You know, and then got the first kit, and then. Begged my grandparents, let me borrow money. So I get big, giant, double bass Tama kit,
nice.
You know, which I did. And then
you grow and up so and get stupid. Were your parents always cool? Was the neighbors always cool? All that?
Yeah, I lived in a house, so nobody cared.
That's clutch. Well, it's good that you have parents that allowed you to do it, because some parents...
Yeah, I have to listen to Lincoln now.
See, but you know,
I mean, I am listening to him, but we still have to get him. I'm going to take Chris's... Oh, yeah, Chris, I'm definitely still getting that kit.
Yeah, right. He's going to get his son the electronic drum kit Chris has because they live in a townhouse. Right. And so, but it's the perfect thing. Those electronic sets have come a long way. And if you have nothing, it will show you how it works.
And I want to play too.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So continue. So after, this is your 12, 13 years old.
Right. And I met a guy that played guitar. I met him somewhere. And then I started doing some little gigs here and there. So, you know, I'm not even old enough to drive. And my mom's schlepping my crap.
Nice.
In her Oldsmobile. And I'm going around doing gigs here and there.
Good for you. That's great.
So, you know, I just kept going and going and going.
So were you in high school at this point?
Middle school.
Middle school. Middle so school. Were you the coolest kid in school?
No, I was like, I was like kept to myself. But my friends would come over. Then you know, I'm like 16, 17, 18. My friends would come over and pretty much drag me off my kit.
Sure.
Or bring other friends over and say, hey, Mitch, play some Genesis or play some Rush.
Genesis.
Yeah, that's kind of how we were with you.
Right. That is exactly how it was.
Lepo's basement. We'd be like, Brian.
All of a sudden, I'm liquored up. They're like, right. Lepo can draw. I'm like,
Yeah. And then I would do like all the stuff in school. I'd do the marching band and the concert band. And then I would do the best. I'd do like the stage band or the productions, like through the musical stuff.
Is that right?
Yeah. And then and then everybody would come up to me and say, all right, play the Phil from In the Air Tonight.
Nice.
Every time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was probably huge at the moment.
Yeah. It was just, yeah, like, like 4 years into it.
It was odd. Let me ask you this. So in marching band and stuff, I never had, I should have, I wish I would have, all that stuff. But they don't talk. Like you're just learning rudiments, or they don't teach like theory or anything when you take.
No, you just, it's really rudiments.
Okay. Yeah. So that's what I always thought. Cause I always wondered if they go into the history of rudiments when you take marching band, because there's a lot to that. And I think it's interesting, but I don't know if that's necessarily the place. If you're trying to just be a band, that's not where you learn history.
I feel like some marching bands are insane, like absolutely insane.
Yeah, I mean, I wish it was like that.
Yeah, I mean maybe in college or no.
Yeah, maybe college. It's
competition marching bands. Like, I mean, that's coordination, choreography.
Right.
Like that's because there's dancing, drum, all of it.
It's all rhythmic. All has to do with, you know, it's okay. I was just wondering that.
Yeah, it was just basic high school marching band. You do a few parades here and there, a football game. It was just marching down, you know, just remember where to land on the one kind of
thing. So were you vibing at this point that you were going to drum for your life, or were you just kind of like, this is all right?
No, I was into it. I really wanted to make a move at it, you know. Good. But of course my dad was like, oh no,
you better have a backup.
And I got out of high school, and then I went to like University of Hartford, auditioned there, Towson,
for drums?
music. Okay, yeah, good. I went to Berkeley, all that stuff, Berkeley College of Music. I got, everybody's like, okay, yeah, you're in. And then dad's like, nope, go get at least a 2-year degree, and then, you know, then you could add it if you want to.
Right.
So I did that. I went away to school for 2 years, came back, went back to Towson, did it for a little bit. And I was like, I could just play in a band and learn my chops. And
right. Well, good for you.
So when did you join your first band?
Well, not your first band.
I mean, I was always playing in a band since I was playing drums, but the real band where we started hitting the local scene was probably in 89, and that was No Presents for Christmas. So it, you know, back then it actually was pretty known, especially Loyola College.
So was that a cover band or
original? It was original. It was both. So we did half and half, did originals and covers. Because back then, a lot of people were doing originals.
Right.
So we were doing the same. We did two albums, recorded all that.
And what style was that band?
Like, it was like R.E.M., The Cure, U2.
Wow. It's 89, man.
89, yeah.
Yeah, that's right, cool. Right. And was cool. that just kind of, you did that for the time?
When college, yeah.
Right. Yeah. And then after college, did you just get a regular job and drum on the side?
Exactly.
Well, how come you owned you had a studio?
So I had that too. So I was doing everything, right?
That's
so,
what I mean. It's yeah, like, I mean, you know, I always hear these stories of Mitch owning a studio and I'm going, my Mitch,
right.
My drummer friend, Mitch, you know, you have this very interesting history of all this stuff. So how does that come into play?
So when I was in the studio recording the first album, I'm just sitting behind looking at all this cool gear. I'm like, holy crap, this is cool. And then
the first album for
No Presents for Christmas, And I'm thinking, this is really cool. And I should actually, there was another project I was in with one of the guys in that band when I was in high school recording at his place. So I didn't even put that in there. But there was another thing I was doing. So I was already used to going to the studio.
Right. You had already had exposure to it. You understood that it was something interesting.
What was the studio?
Secret Sound.
Secret Sound.
Which is John Grant. He's on the other side of town. John's been around forever, too.
Yeah, I don't know if I know.
Yeah. John's been,
Where was it?
In Rosedale, okay. Middle River. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and then because of that, we're now in the 80s and, you know, electronic drums and all this Simmons pads are really, and I'm totally addicted to it.
Right. And you're probably a little ahead of the curve because you've been around it a little bit.
And I just started getting really into electronic drums. And I mean, now we have everything in a compact pad and we have awesome processors that can handle it. But back then, I literally had my Simmons kit, I had a pad, and I had this rack, like as tall as a refrigerator, filled with samplers and triggers and modules. I mean, we used to joke about it. We used to call it the beast because it took three people to lift up the rack case. It was filled with just all
and
these
to
samples.
Be clear, all the he's talking about now is this in one of the size of a phone sitting right beside you.
That's great.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not crazy, but
right.
Yeah. Yeah, but I was in the sampling. I mean, I'm like one of the few drummers around here that's triggering loops and hitting samples. So we would do certain songs that had like that sample. We used to do A Cult of Personality by Living Color. Nice. So I would trigger those little speech parts and everything.
Right.
So, and then we got into sequencing. So I'm the dumb drummer with the sampler had a sequencing package.
Wow, were ahead of the game.
I was nuts. You know, so we'd do Nine Inch Nails had like a hole, and we'd do some EMF, you know, stuff like at the time.
Sure.
So I'm the dumb drummer with a keyboard next to me and a computer monitor, so I could trigger the.
That's awesome, man.
What's he doing?
And back then, no drummers were doing that.
No.
Or very rarely.
Very rarely. They had a drum pad and they would trigger like one module. But I was just totally into what you could do with it.
Right. You were a mad scientist.
I was, absolutely.
So did the No Presents for Christmas thing end amicably?
Yeah, it's like a lot of these projects, they just... You know, and then I get involved in another project and another project, and I just keep going and going and going.
Yeah, so Bill Dixon and the MTT, what is that all?
So that was after No Presents, I was kind of looking for something to do, and I found an ad, and I reached out to this guy, Bill, and then we talked, and he said, hey, you know, it's all original music, here's the stuff, and then we did a few showcases here and there.
Know the band, No Presents?
No, he kind of knew of me, but he didn't know. And then I did, you know, after just meeting and talking to him, we did this thing. And then we went to New York a few times to do showcases.
Wow.
I mean, we did an album, again, back at Secret Sound.
You got an album called Unplugged.
Yeah, he did, because that was during the time of the whole...
Yeah, that's the big run.
MTV Unplugged.
Like, you know, 94 to 98.
And that's where the whole percussion thing started. So, back then, everybody's doing these, these acoustic things, and Bill was doing it, and this other guy in the band, Jeff Colson, was in the band. So we were doing a lot of two guitars, and I go out and get some percussion.
Right. So you just started
right,
adding.
I just started adding. I played some congas and added some tambourine, you know, and just started learning how to do it.
Right.
Right. And I got to tell you, it's the best thing ever because I would teach myself to have better control of my left hand because I'm playing tambourine with my left hand and playing congas with my right. So I built up my left hand. And as a drummer, we all know our right hands are pretty much
You're
stronger.
So smart to do that. It's so obnoxious when people, because I never messed with tambourines. Mm-hmm. I rarely messed with like a lot of stuff. So a lot of times, I mean, now it's no big deal, but like when you first start drumming and somebody's like, well, you drum, here's a tambourine. I'm like, I hate this damn
right.
thing.
So, like, but as, can you play the congos?
Yes.
Like, is that a given? Like if you can drum, you can
No.
It's a little different.
It's a different technique. You have to. I mean, you could probably make it rhythmic.
I feel like it would almost be closer to like slapping a bass guitar.
Kind of, because you have to know how to mute and hit a slap. And,
right.
You know.
Right. Like, if you are a drummer, you understand rhythm. So you could make it work better than somebody who can't.
Right.
But I would say that you have to work at being a good percussionist. Like there's a big, every drum is different.
Right.
Every drum, like you said, it has mute points. You slap, you get a different, you know, flexion off of the top than when you swipe towards you, you know? So there is an art for it. And I never spent a lot of time on actual percussion. Now I do more than ever.
Only
but
in Florida.
Well, right. In Florida for that 1 year.
That's all you had. Yeah.
Right. And it was like, but that was only 1 year, right?
That you had it? That maybe a little more.
Yeah. But yeah. So, you know, I don't know. But it's not about me. It's about Mitch Shavitz. So how
Shavitz.
Did you... Shavitz.
Shavitz,
well, my whole life, I've known him for 10
it's
years.
Mitch Shavitz
I think
and
I always
outcome.
Say...
It's not
I'm
the...
So used to
I know. Look, I'm the guy...
The Shavitz.
In about 5 more years, Mitch, I will start saying it correctly. I don't know why I'm such a dunce with this kind of stuff, but that's how I roll. Okay.
So the whole percussion thing, I started doing more and more of that. And then I was at a gig with Bill and this guy, Richard Walton, who I knew played jazz. And he said to me, hey, I hear you're playing some percussion with Bill. I'm doing another album. Would you like to play percussion on it?
That's exciting.
And I said, sure, why not? I've never done that before. I mean, I played some percussion on Bill's album and a little on No Presence and not like full on.
Right. It's right, not right, as a gig. A,
right.
Like
right.
That's...
So he said, hey, we can even. And at the time I started building my studio, I was using. You know, I had 8-ats and the old stuff and I was starting that. So he came over and, you know, he gives me the song and we listen to it and I'm thinking, and I'm playing around with it and I go, cool, I got an idea. Verse, I'm going to do the congas here. I'm going to play timbales and cowbell here. And then during the bridge, there's a shaker. And he goes, and I started doing a rehearsal with the whole thing in one take.
Nice.
And he goes, well, let's just do like sections. I'm like, no. Give me a chance. Let me just do one straight take. It'll be fun. And I'm doing everything. I'm playing congas. I'm playing rain stick. I'm playing
right.
Shake,
you're doing it
all in one take. And I was like, this is cool. And then he gave me another song to play on and so on. And then when he did his release, he said, hey, we just joined the band. Now you're part of the band. They already had a drummer, this guy, Eric, awesome drummer. And I mean, I've been playing with him.
Yeah, that was back in 97.
97. Yeah. So I'm still playing with him today. And just recently, our drummer, Eric, just getting a little tired of it. So I've moved now to the drum chair.
Yeah, I saw that. That's right. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, and Eric's a phenomenal drummer. And, you know, the band misses him, but he just is getting a little tired.
Yeah, man, if you get burned out, a lot of the drummer interviews we do, one of the main themes is if you're not in it, you know, just stop. Like you got to have the passion and fire.
Well, that's how Justin said.
Right.
You can see it in drummers' eyes when they're like kind of checked out.
Absolutely. And if you're checked out, it's not helping anybody. And it's good to just, you know,
right. And every once in a while, Eric couldn't make a gig in the years and I would fill in the drum seat here and there, just here and there. But now I've taken over the seat. Unfortunately, there's no percussionists.
Right.
So what I've done is I've kind of set up a little percussion thing on my left. So I have like this, those little congas without the bottom, those Giovanni congas.
Right. What are they?
I forget what they're called. Yeah. I have a little timbale. I got, you know, a triangle. I got a belt tree, a woodblock, all that. So I can kind of fill it in. If
right.
Can, right. So,
well, it was great, just not to go back too much, but the New Year's Eve gig, it was like a hybrid gig between Making Waves and Uncommitted.
And Uncommitted, yeah.
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 And so it was like, and it was the first time.
How long ago was that?
It was New Year's Eve of 2021, 22.
Oh, so recently.
Yeah, it was recently.
Was it
yeah.
after COVID?
It was right.
Or was it right before?
Right in the middle of it. Because I remember some people were wearing masks.
That would be 21. Okay.
It
right.
was like 21.
Where was it? Where was the New Year's show?
At,
yeah, what was our place?
Main Stage.
Main Stage Grill. Larry Gordon. Larry shout out Larry Gordon. Larry yeah. and Terry. Good people.
Yeah, Larry nice. Was so into the local music scene.
Yeah, Larry does a lot for the veterans. Yeah. We played a show at Goucher College with Technicolor Motorhome, and that's Larry. Larry's all heart, and he puts his money where his mouth is, and he's a good
dude. He's a good guy.
Yeah, that's
he's
awesome.
Real good guy.
And that was a fun gig because I remember
it was
because
man.
Steve's looking at me, the bass player. Steve's mm-hmm. looking at me when I'm playing certain songs, and he knows there's percussion there, and now I'm playing it. Right. He's looking at me with that big grin on his face.
Oh yeah.
I mean, anytime that Steve calls me and wants me to do that again, I'm there.
Yeah. Right. Well, I would love to do that. We
oh,
will
yeah.
do that.
Why don't you have a special guest, Making Waves?
Listen,
guest?
He will. The I minute will. Steve sees
do
this,
it.
He's like,
Steve,
Mitch,
do it now.
Absolutely.
Do it. Yeah,
he's right. He's right. I don't think Mitch would do that.
Do it. 100% will do that because it was
I'm
a
in.
Great night. Dude.
I'm in.
Oh, yeah,
so
we're,
fun.
We're calling them out
because
now.
We locked in. Like it was just like sometimes you get if you play with other people, it works, and then sometimes it's like Jedi work. Like it's you're just locked that you can't miss. You're
no,
breathing
I love it.
Together.
So, cool, you know? With Sweet Lita,
and that was Mitch.
So Sweet
and
Lita,
Ricky, right?
So Sweet Lita has Tristan. And Word does percussions with Tristan's drums, and it just adds a whole new dynamic to Sweet Lita. It's amazing.
It is. It's full. And if you know how to utilize it, which goes back to you do need to work at it because it's taste. Yeah.
Right.
It's like
right. And the trick is not to overplay. Like the percussionist is kind of filling in that
right.
filling in between the drum kits.
Right.
So you got to know not. Overdo it, not play on top. You just want to fill in those little
right.
holes.
And the reason it works so well is because I'm not a flashy drummer. Right. I keep a groove, you know, and it's like, so it was just perfect. Like right. we just synced
when
up.
When are you playing McAvoy's? That's coming up.
June 8th. But that is not a Making Waves show.
That's not a Making Waves show.
That's not a Making Waves show.
Oh, it's a smoking
That's
section.
A smoking
oh, yeah,
section
we'll be there. We'll
and
be there.
This won't be out till after June
8th. Right. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Are you coming?
June 8th?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's my voice. Right, it's
good.
In my neck.
Right,
and I need
I
to see a smoking section.
It was just a quick, we had just gotten this gig.
I don't.
I, just I didn't know. Okay. Sorry.
I'll talk about it if I was there or not on the next episode.
So Richard is a very nice guy and he's a very good player.
Yeah.
And he's a great songwriter.
Right. He's gotten tons of awards for his songwriting over the years. And then Richard always uses me when he does his solo stuff. He has me play drums and percussion on it. And what he does is I'll play some stuff for him that he may or may not use and he'll put it aside. And then he'll put out a new album. Like he just put out another new album. Mm-hmm. And he goes, hey, by the way, you played on this song.
That's so
And
funny.
I said, really? I don't remember playing on that. And he goes, no. I just took some of your drum stuff and reprogrammed it because I like the way your drums sound and your groove and everything. So I just kind of rearranged
nice.
It.
Nice. All of a sudden you're on an album.
Right.
That's awesome.
And with today's technology, so I still have my studio. I've kind of slimmed it down just all computer-based, as most studios are. And he just sends me files, and I just sit there and play drums and
Dude.
Send it back. It's that easy.
So, Mitch, through your life of drum, has your job been drums and studio work, or are you like a teacher during the day?
No. So in '98, I ended up working for Guitar Center.
Okay.
So I was there when it first opened up in Towson. Mm-hmm. And then I honestly, when I got there, I said, I want to be in the drum department. The manager said, nope, we got too many drummers. I need somebody in audio. And I see you've done some studio stuff. I said, well, I don't think I'm that good. He goes, no, you'll be fine. So I kind of got thrown into it. And a year or two later, I got bumped up to what they call GC Pro, which is the professional division. So now I'm in outside sales. And I was doing it for 18 years or so.
I got you. So that's cool.
All right. And I built up a big clientele. And then because of that, I started making more relationships. You know, I've done some interesting things,
right.
You know, over the,
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, so Archaic Smile I was told Chris mentioned that group. What was that group?
So that was the Leftovers from Bill Dixon. So, you know, as things kind of go, there was this weird, Bill got some kind of weird offer to do this record deal. And it was kind of like you had to pay the money to, and we're like, and me, and
yeah,
the,
that doesn't sound
it doesn't
right.
sound right. So I remember we were sitting in my old studio and Bill's there and Jeff Colson and this guy, Bob Gray, we were the MTT in the band, and we're sitting there. We get the guy on the phone. Well, first off, the guy sends a demo of all the stuff he's done and all these, you know, he's got connections. I could put you in Best Buy because he was in Minneapolis.
Okay.
So, and it's where Best Buy is based out of. So okay. He had some kind of weird connection. So we're all sitting there and he sends a demo tape, and it's like a country song, a rock song, a reggae song. And we're all sitting there and I'm listening to it and I'm thinking, the reggae song, the mix sounds like the rock song and the country song. You know, if you know reggae, you know you accent on the three.
Right.
You know, country, there's a little different of a feel. And so we get the guy on the phone, and at this point, Bill got a little greedy. He's like, well, I want everybody to kick in 25%, and you guys all get paid back based upon if you wrote the song, if you played on the song, like all these weird things.
Right.
And the three of us are all looking at each other going, well, this is stupid.
Right.
This is just dumb. And the guy's on the phone and he's talking to us. And I said, well, listen, I'm not being, you know, mean or anything or cruel. Or I'm just saying, why can't we just record this stuff locally? Why do we have to go out to your studio in Minneapolis? And he got pissed. He just, I don't know what his motive was. It was just really weird. So the three of us decided we're done. We formed Archaic Smile. And that, hands down, was probably my favorite band I've ever been in. We did two albums. All original material. Wheel was working with me at my studio, and he was heavily involved with the production and even mixing us live. The band got, I mean, we were close. We were playing at Pier 6, mm-hmm. opening up. We were playing at the Taste of Baltimore at Camden Yards. We opened up for Hootie and the Blowfish.
Nice.
Opened up for Duncan Sheik. Wow. We were getting, I mean, we had a good connection with Mix 106. The guy loved us, so we were, you
is
know,
that music still around?
Like, no, I mean, it's we did our first album. Wheel did a lot of the mixing, mm-hmm. most all of it, and then we did the second one. I was getting a little fried, so we Steve Wright at Right Way Studios right. did the he mixed it after we recorded everything on our own.
Wow!
But that album is
well, that's what Chris was acting like.
Yeah,
that
album is great. I mean, it's music. I mean, Bob and Jeff could just write. They're like they're totally into Crowded House.
Nice.
So they have that sensibility on how they write together. It's
right.
so good.
And what the guy from Crowded House was in another band.
Split Ends.
That's the Steven special. Yeah. Steven, the bass
the
player.
Finn.
And
Yeah, Finn.
Yeah, yeah. right. Something like that. Like, they, you know, it's like Steven loves that. I think Split Ends.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we covered a Split Ends song.
We might have.
Waves. Yeah. But that's okay. Wild, man. Yeah. Archaic Smile. Well, now I want to hear some of it.
Yeah,
yeah, I'll get you a disc. I mean, yeah. He probably has one. Ask
yeah,
Will.
Now, actually, yeah. Will.
He probably
Will,
has
Will, you have one?
Right, full disclosure, the producer of the show is the Will Chris we are talking about.
He might be
about.
Hanging in
just a... yeah, he's getting ready to blast it in our ear.
Nice.
Yeah, that's what he's doing. Yeah, so five old guys.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
Were you
that.
Old?
Well, I was in my 40s, so I guess.
Okay.
That was right. just like a. It was all the yacht rock kind of stuff. A lot of.
That's fun playing.
Yeah, it was it again, but it got a little. Mm. I got bored.
Was it bored because you had to play like the part or, you like were the gigs good?
The gigs were okay, and the vocals were top notch.
Yeah.
I mean, we would do Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, and they would just nail it.
Right.
Like perfectly nailed. Great vocals. And, it, you know, for the most part, everybody got along. And,
right.
But, you know, it, again, time goes
yeah,
on.
I mean, if you go, it's, you know, that's like, that's 5 years.
Yeah, it was a
yeah
long
like
time.
That's a nice yeah. run. Yeah. So,
oh, yeah.
If you do that for a minute, you know, yeah. that's how it goes.
It was fun.
And then Richard Walton comes back into your life, or he never really left.
He just decided, I'm going to do my solo stuff, and the jazz stuff's going to be separate. So
now, does he play all the way up and down the East Coast, or is it just Virginia?
Virginia, Delaware, Mid-Atlantic.
He's always playing.
He's always playing every day. He's probably playing right now somewhere.
Yeah, the last time I saw him was at Gus Fest. God love him. Yeah. Gus.
Oh, God.
Gus Dankert passed away.
Yeah, that was recent, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a year or two, maybe.
Yeah. And it's funny because we just played the gig with the Richard Walton Group where the last time I saw Gus.
It's amazing. Yeah. This guy, Gus, this is the kind of guy he is. He always came to Making Waves shows. He was an interesting body type, okay? In the most respectful sense, anybody who knows him will know what I'm talking about. And he was the most unassuming guy in the world. But if you started playing funk, this son of a bitch, it was like James Brown. Like he'd cut across the floor, popcorn feet. His body moved ways that, and you're like, holy shit, Gus, like you're fucking getting it. So anyway, he goes to see Richard Walton show one night. You tell this story do you know what I'm talking about?
Well, there was one time, so after Five Old Guys kind of ended, some of the guys in the band, including Richard, we just kept on going for about another year. And recently, back to main stage, asked Richard, hey, can you put a band together instead of doing a solo thing? So Richard called us all up.
Larry
asked Richard. And so Richard goes, hey, can you guys do this? And we literally just like, okay, no problem. And no rehearsal. We just showed up and played. And it was a bunch of 70s, 80s, same stuff we did. I guess it's osmosis.
It's just like an old Richard Walton show.
Yeah, right. It just stuck in your head. So we just did it. And Gus comes up to me, goes, man, you guys are great. Did you guys practice? How long did it take you to practice? I said, we didn't practice.
Had you met Gus?
Oh, yeah. When I was in the uncommitted, I would always.
At the time, you were in the uncommitted. Yeah. I forgot.
So, Gus is like, are you serious? You didn't practice? No, we just, He's like, wow, it sounds like you guys have been practicing for a while.
Right. Well, that night or the next night, he went home and formed the Richard Walton fan club on Facebook.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, and he starts pushing Richard Walton's music, basically, like just, out of nowhere, and that was the kind of guy he was the curator of the Richard Walton fan club from then on out.
And then he would come and see Richard play solo all the time.
Yep.
And then Richard, I guess, told him, hey, I have a jazz group too. And then Gus would show up at that too. So he'd see Richard solo, me with him playing rock and roll, and then the jazz band.
Amazing guy. Yeah, and he passed away. Yeah, and that was sad. The last time Richard played that show with us. He came and played two of his originals and I drummed with him. And he was a real sweet guy. Good man.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
We skipped over, we skipped over the Mark Wood project.
So again, that was after No Presence, was one of the guys in the band. Mark was the keyboard player, but also a great guitar player and songwriter. And that's another project where all original music, no covers whatsoever. And it was some really talented guys and people that played on that album. We had Scott and Jen Smith. They have like a little thing together too, and they're known, but they were on the album. Mm-hmm. And Rob Belanger.
I know that name.
Rob was in a band called Burst of Silence. And unfortunately, Rob passed away a few years ago. Mm. And his dad was Mark Belanger, the Oriole baseball player.
Oh, wow. Maybe that's why.
Yeah, maybe. Okay. And Mark and Rob, just great songwriters together. And again, it was another project where it was different drummers and different everything. And I did percussion. And then when that band went out and played, I was moved to percussion. And it was either Mark St. Pierre or Greg Tamakis playing drums. So it was always fun to play with these guys.
Oh, man, Mark St. Pierre.
Yeah, Mark St. Pierre and John. It was just so much fun. And then again, we would do these showcase shows. We would play at Fletcher's. We'd open up for... I remember there used to be this thing called Freakness Festival down in Fells Point. Mm-hmm. And we were sandwiched between like Too Much Joy, who else? Dishwalla.
I remember Dishwalla.
Right? Dishwalla. I remember Dishwalla. It was us. And then Spin Doctors.
Wow. That's
it was awesome. A cool lineup.
Fletcher's?
No, it was outside. Oh, it was outside down in Fells Point in the square. They built a huge stage over the that square that's up, that's elevated.
Yeah.
Right. Wow.
That was crazy. That was so much fun.
Yeah, that's fun gigs. Yeah. That's good stuff.
Do you do you do any singing? Do you sing at all?
No. I'm a terrible singer.
No?
No. Every once in a while.
I thought I seen you do backup. I do backup here and there.
I'm in the new band I'm in, I'm forced to do backup.
Yeah.
But, right. But I'm not a great singer, I'll be honest.
Well, you always made it work when I never knew you weren't a singer. No, or, I'm not. You know,
I'm not.
For the record. Whoa, Davis is. You don't not, want me saying
Brian does some good vocals.
No,
Brian does a great vocal.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. The one time I showed up to one gig, he got up behind the kit, sang Billy Idol song, and then I got on the kit.
Yeah. Actually, there was a couple times, like you did audio. He did audio at my family reunion.
Okay.
My Making Waves played. Yep. And so we're in my, like Paige and I, you know, Donna, everybody. And the sound guy pulls up and it's Mitch. And I'm like, holy shit.
And you didn't know that was
No, I didn't know. Steven
knew. Steven didn't tell you.
Oh, nice. Yeah, yeah. That's awesome.
But we go way back. It's good stuff. So what is Eye Level?
So Eye Level was the leftovers from Fog. So it only lasted a year.
Okay.
But it's the same guys, just minus one.
I got you. And then the Uncommitted Cats, John Kelly.
Yeah, all
we them. Love, you know, love Elizabeth D.C. The Uncommitted is a band. Right. They do
like Making Waves.
Yeah. They're, and so when Making Waves started, it was like Making Waves and the Uncommitted kind of started. They were before us, but it's the same vibe. Like, you know, they did 80s,
90s, same fan base too.
Yeah, right. And so we kind of
Elizabeth
started.
Play, she sings whenever she's around at your shows. She gets up on stage.
Elizabeth
with you, right?
DC does. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, we'll invite her up and she'll do, you know, whatever the, what is the song? She usually does Four Non Blondes or Pat Benatar. Incredibly powerful voice.
Yeah.
Yeah, great, great. Bunch of performers. Love those guys, John Kelly and the Uncommitted. And they're still going strong.
Yeah, they're still going strong. And that was a pro where, again, you know, I was kind of tired.
Well, no, that I didn't want to bring it up, but that was one of those, like, everybody's cool as far as I know, but it was just a weird thing. All of a sudden,
Mitch is out.
They call me and they're like, can you drum? And John Kelly's like, Mitch, where the hell's Mitch? And I'm going, I don't know. You know.
It was just one of those things where I was kind of, I was, you know, it was 6 years and I was getting, again, you know, you as a drummer, and I even read articles about professional drummers who leave these big gigs because they're just tired of it.
Right.
You know,
and if you lose that fire, it shows.
Right.
It shows
right. Like,
in the work.
Like a great example is Simon Phillips was asked to be the drummer for Toto when Jeff died. Mm. And back to me, I'm a huge Jeff Porcaro fan.
Oh, like my gosh.
My drumming is, and Richard will say this, I'm like the pocket drummer. I just play to the song. I stay in the pocket. I don't do any craziness. You know, just groove to the song. And I get that from listening to Jeff and studio drummers like Tony Thompson and Hal Blaine. So that's where I get my inspiration
from.
Your
pedigree, right.
But Simon's a great example of he was in Toto for a long time, and he wrestled with it, but he just got tired of it.
He was
just like, hey, I want to move on. Now he's just doing back to his jazz thing, and he's happy.
Jeff, the Picaros in general, like that touch. And he was on Steely. He did some Steely
work.
He was on Gaucho and stuff like that.
Yes.
He did. He was like the Rosanna Shuffle. Mm. If you remember Toto and the song Rosanna, he's doing a halftime shuffle that at the time Bernard Pretty Purdy had done it. A little variant, and John Bonham on
Fool in the Rain
did a nice halftime shuffle, but this wasn't like Picaro.
He kind of like mixed it.
Right.
Yeah.
Jeff Picaro did the Rosanna shuffle and blew everybody's fucking mind.
Right.
And so it's just a little variant of these other great halftime shuffles. And it's so cool and hip that it's got its own.
Oh, I can circle back to this now. What is a shuffle?
I'll do it if you want me to, but
it's
a form of time. If you're playing a standard rock song, you're just playing a standard beat. It's one, two, three. A shuffle adds a hop, and it's like the blues is usually a shuffle.
Right.
And one, and two.
Right.
Got it.
So where a regular song is, one and two and three and four, But if you're shuffling it, you know, it's more of a, and so that usually means you're playing blues, jazz. It just gives a song a feel.
That's great. I've been meaning to clear that up for four right. episodes. And
we'll dig this. Well, so the Rosanna Shuffle, when you leave, actually Chris will throw it on tonight or right. so. Listen to what he's doing. Yeah. It's really a it's right. really
and the kick drum's doing like a Bo Diddley beat.
Oh my mm-hmm. gosh! Right.
So you got like two different rhythms going
it's
on.
Syncopation right. yeah, on crazy. Top of a saucy shuffle.
Yeah, I mean I've heard the song a thousand times, but I've never paid attention to yeah. what you're telling me about.
Well,
right now.
Picaro, that's a true testament to the kind of drummer you are, and I do think you vibe like him because every time you always have the nicest gear and you're always the tightest. Like you just seem tight. And like I said, you're rudimentarily sound. Like, you know, it's not that you can't, you just don't because it doesn't call for it. And that's a disciplined drummer. That's a long life, you know, that's a lifer in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But who the hell am I?
No, that's good.
Big machine.
So when I was kind of a little bored, I decided to look around and I found these guys were looking for a drummer and joined them in 2022.
Oh, so they were already an
I was kind of in between. It just so happened it happened the same week.
Wow.
Where I did an audition with Big Machine and they were auditioning all kinds of drummers. And the thing about them was he had a vision. I want a show. I don't want any goofiness between songs. I want to go bam, bam, bam. You know, some of these songs, we don't have a keyboard player. It's four guys. There's going to be some backing keyboard parts to a click. And I need a drummer that could just lock into a click. So I said, okay, great. Turns out I get a phone call before my audition. And the bass player in that band is somebody I used to be with a long time ago. I used to play with in No Presents for Christmas.
Wow, nice.
So it's a small world.
Right.
Well, it tells us, it's
serendipity.
Small tour is correct. Right. So he called me up. He said, hey, do you remember me? I'm like, holy crap. You know, it's Jason. So did my audition. They go, hey, you got the gig? And super tight rehearsals before he would even do a gig. And, I mean, we're playing big rooms.
I could tell you were very excited.
So is this originals or covers?
It's all covers.
All right. covers.
But it's like super high energy.
It's 80s serious and 90s.
Covers. I mean, yeah. it's yeah. serious. Like we do like medleys of songs. And it's like when the song ends, you better be ready to go.
Right.
There is no getting a drink of water. There
right.
isn't any, there's nothing. So you right. got to be, and the band's amazing. Those guys are great. It's cool because we have our own truck. We have our own
wow.
PA.
That's
we have awesome. Our own giant lighting system. Everybody's on in-ears. Everybody in the band's on no guitar amps on stage. Everybody's using processors and everything.
Good for you guys. Awesome.
Everything's backed up. So we have a backup for the backup. So the computer goes down. We got two other backups.
Yeah, it looks like a big machine. I mean, yeah, that's yeah, the thing is yeah. like, but that's good, man. That's discipline. Like the reason why Making Waves has any success is because Steven is a disciplined son of a bitch.
Right.
I mean, I love him, but he's very disciplined. And if you don't have that, you won't, you know, you'll only go so far. So.
Right, right. And we did our first Fager's gig. And after the first break, the guy, the entertainment manager comes up to us. He's like, where you guys been? He said, I'm texting the agent right now. I want you guys back here this summer.
Good for you.
And he gave
man.
Us three other dates.
Yeah, man.
And
Fingers
that's,
is
and
hard
that's,
to get into.
And exactly.
Yeah.
And here we are, April, playing one gig. And all of a sudden, here you guys go. Here's three
yeah,
more dates.
Good for you.
I was just going to ask, how many gigs do you play a month?
Or it's like 3 to 4, which is fine.
Three
we
to
don't
four
overdo-
a month. And
yeah.
that's all around here. Local.
Yeah, well, now we're doing Harrington's. We're doing
like, Ocean
we're,
City.
We're doing the Jetty. Yeah. We're doing Ocean City. Oh, we're doing all, you know, we did... Red Eye Doc, but we're doing all the bigger rooms.
Right, right. right
I yeah. love it. You know, we you know, come in with all this crap and all this gear.
Yeah, I mean, if you have a spectacle show.
Yeah, it yeah. shows.
I know.
Yeah,
it shows. It does, man. I'm
absolutely.
So proud of you. I'm yeah. happy for you.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, we got so. The, I mean, it's great. Like the lights are even sequenced, are synced up to the sequences.
I saw so a when, little video.
Yeah, I mean, that.
And
that,
I was like, holy shit,
yeah,
this is
cool.
dice.
Yeah,
like,
and that video, that's not. That is real live.
Right.
And
that's not doctored
or
anything.
No, no. That is all synced up. And
now, to be clear, though, are you doing all of the stuff or is that the big machine is already the big machine
no,
and
it's,
then Mitch
there,
shows up?
No.
It's none of Mitch sequencing or anything.
No,
like
no.
That,
well,
right?
there's some songs. Like what's really cool is we do Jane Says
nice.
By Jane's Addiction, right?
But you got the steel drum.
That's what I do. So instead of me sitting behind there and just like playing a rhythm, I hit a loop. I get up from behind the kit. I got another pad, and I'm triggering. I'm playing all the steel drum parts. People are like, "That's awesome. Cool."
Yeah, great. That's a perfect.
I was surprised how well that went over.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Totally,
yeah, they're into it.
Well, at Fager's, man, that's a great vibe. Yeah, at Fager's too. Yeah. And that's a great gig.
Played Fager's recently?
In April, and we're back
there. What do you think about the rising stage?
So yeah, that's a funny story. So we showed up there, and we have our own drum riser. And we try to use it because it just looks cooler.
Right.
So we're looking at it like, we could fit it in. So we put it up there and we make sure, nothing is that rising.
Was my man okay with it? The guy that's always there with the beard.
Dude, you must have been fucking towering over everybody.
Oh, I was. In fact, I'm sitting there, there's like that ledge behind you.
Oh my God, I shit my pants.
Yeah. And I'm sitting there playing and there's still people looking over. And then he tells you, hey, I'm going to raise the stage during the first or second song. And I'm just going, okay.
During the song.
I didn't even know it was going up. Awesome. I didn't even realize it. It was that smooth.
Oh, my God.
I didn't realize it. So it goes up, and I'm looking after the third, somewhere in the third song, I'm like, oh, yeah, the stage is up. And then I realize, oh, yeah, hi there.
Like people
are like literally right, like sitting right next to me.
And that's, that are standing up.
Yeah. No, they're sitting there.
Well, the Fager's, they got this riser behind
you. Yeah, right behind you. Oh, people sit there. Yeah, there's stools. Never go up there, so it looks like they're standing because they're always leaning.
Yeah, it's tall stools.
Okay. Yeah. But I'm high sitting there playing. I'm like, this guy's
Funny.
Like really checking me out.
Yeah. I told him.
Brian had his eyes closed the first time that happened.
Dude, I got seasick. I totally spaced out. I forgot. And all of a sudden, I'm like, as I'm drumming, I'm like, I didn't understand what was happening. When I opened up my eyes, I'm like it freaked me out briefly,
I didn't even know it happened.
That's amazing. Awesome. I swear every time it scares the heck out of me.
That's awesome.
Briefly,
I'm glad I didn't realize it.
Well, look, I'm glad it went well for you. He texted me the night before.
And I said, I'm going to hide a drumstick.
Right.
And so I hid a drumstick somewhere. And what's funny is I was about to, and then people are coming up to me, go, hey, can I get a drumstick? Can I get guitar picks? And I'm handing all my broken sticks.
It's so funny.
I always go through sticks. Right. And I only broke one or two. And I'm like, I'm going to tell Brian anyway I hit it.
Right. Well, look, it's so funny. I don't, like, for whatever reason, I'm not a heavy hitter, so, but I don't break a lot of sticks, but I'm also, some say, on a tight budget, So I'm at these shows, and sometimes kids are like, can I get a stick? And I'm like, sure, and I give one out, and then another kid's like, can I get a stick? I'm like, yeah.
Sorry, bud.
And all of a sudden, I'm like, I have four sticks left, and I'm like, I got to shut it down, baby.
Go home.
And Steven's like, you ought to just, find a bunch of cheap sticks and put them in your car, and when they ask.
I can print you some.
Holy shit. Brilliant.
That's a good idea.
It is a great idea.
Yeah, I got some old.
It's incredible.
Kids are coming. People are coming up to me. Hey, can I get a stick? I'm like, oh man, I just gave out my broken ones. And he goes, how about a new one? I'm like, oh, if they weren't so expensive,
you said they're $20.
They're like, if they weren't $8 a pair,
right? It's ridiculous. But I
will say with when it comes to my gear, I use ProMark and Evans, and I have a great connection with D'Addario because of my association at Guitar Center. I was able to, I'm not there at Guitar Center anymore, but I was able to make friends with the National
Network.
So they give me a bit of a discount.
That's awesome.
And even though I'm not there anymore, they take care of me, and they're so awesome. They make a great product. And, the National sales manager, she's great. She's really friendly. And I'm anybody that's been there, I've always made friends with, and we've always had discussions about what should we do next.
Man. I mean, those kinds of networks are what ends up being the most fruitful, as we found out. Chris Wheel. I mean, the mere fact that you knew Chris Wheel after I've known you for 10 years, I've known him for however many years.
I've known Wheel since like 96.
I mean, that's crazy.
97.
And that's funny enough. I knew him up until 95, 96, and then I didn't see him until...
He was hanging out with me.
He was with you, right. I mean, it's such a small world. Mitch, Flock of Eagles.
So that just happened recently,
I know. I just saw a flyer. I said, am I reading this right?
Tribute band.
Eagles Tribute. So,
incredible name.
I know all of a sudden I'm getting asked to do all these things. And then this guy, Greg Say, who I used to be with, and he plays with some of the guys from the band Cinema.
I know that.
Right. So, yeah, they're like, they've been around forever. Classic rock band. So some of those guys were doing like acoustic shows together, and they were doing a lot of Eagles songs. So one of the owners of a club they were playing at said, you know, you should get an Eagles band together. You guys would sound so good. So Gray calls me up. He's like, we're going to start an Eagles tribute band. And all of a sudden.
Now, are you singing harmonies? No. I didn't think so.
I could barely sing back up in Big Machine. So
I'm like, nope.
So how many are in that band?
Five people in the band. Yeah. There were a few more, but we had to shift some things around. Sure. And it's this guy, Ange, from Alto Ego, the guitar player.
I know Alto Ego.
He is a great guitar player.
Yeah, they're
so
nasty.
Yeah, so we needed a Joe Walsh, right. And he fit the bill. Harmonies are just amazing. And, you know, we started playing the fall of last year, and now all of a sudden, everywhere we're going, I want you guys back.
Yeah, look, tributes, if you're good,
if you're good.
Yep. There's a lot of money to be made out
and
there.
And I'm just going, hey, guys, we don't have to just do Eagles. There's a lot of Joe Walsh songs we could do. Absolutely. Some James Gang. We're doing some Henley. We're doing Dirty Laundry.
Don't sleep on Glenn Fry solo, Oh, dude.
You belong to
Smuggler's Blues.
That's a long catalog. That's a vast.
Right. You belong to the city.
Yeah.
I mean, Soul Glenn Searcher. Fry solo reminds me of my dad.
An Eagles tribute band doesn't just have to be Eagles.
No, it doesn't. There's Don Felder.
Yeah, man. Don Felder, baby. James Gang, you said. Yeah.
So we're doing all that. And at this point, we're pretty much a few songs away from having three sets of Eagles.
That's awesome.
And again, I'm using my drum pad. We're doing like Dirty Laundry. You know, a lot of the I'm triggering the loops. I'm triggering the drum machine. You know,
Henley is tasty. Yeah, he's kind of an underrated drummer. Like everybody knows he's a great singer, but he's an underrated drummer.
And it's funny because when I started doing this stuff and I'm starting to listen to Eagles songs, you know, as a drummer, you're like, just the Eagles. You know, you're thinking,
right.
But when you really start listening to the Eagles songs and you really start going, listening to the arrangements, you're like, holy shit.
Yeah, dude.
They are like Beatles arrangements.
They put a lot of thought.
They're crazy. So I have to literally, I usually don't do this. And I'm at the point where I could forget them, but I make charts.
Good for you.
I rarely do it. But for this, because first verse, second chorus, next verse, next chorus will have double.
Right.
Yeah.
He always throws in some weird little sauce.
Yeah, right. And you're doing the verse, but then half of it switches to a chorus.
Right.
And the drumming is not the same. I mean, like some of the songs, like Wasted Time is a great example, where the drums are like, first two lines is this, next line is that, and the third.
Half the time after you're figuring out all these kinds of interesting that you didn't consider things, a lot of the times then you're like, holy shit, this fucker's singing too. It's like good, you know? And I gained an appreciation.
I mean, as much as we learned
Life in the Fast Lane, and I know the song like the back of my hand, so we're like, oh yeah, I'll play it, no problem. And you know, it is easy, but there's a lot of hits and there's a lot of stops and starts, and you think you know them, but do you?
Right.
I'll have to check out Flock of Eagles on my own. Yeah. I don't think Amanda will come with.
She won't.
But it's funny. We came up with the whole, you know, Flock of Seagulls, and we did.
It's brilliant.
It's a selling point.
Yeah. It's a good selling point.
Life in the Fast Lane is a great example of like, he's doubling it here.
Right.
And then you go to this section. I have more appreciation for the Eagles than
I'm
ever
telling
had.
You, I just did Life in the Fast Lane and listen to it. Like when you put it on, just like you've heard it a million times, you can hear it in your head, but it's just a little saucy. Like it's a little bit harder than one would think to, you know? And so it's cool that you're doing that. That's awesome.
Yeah. I have a new appreciation.
Yeah, definitely, man. Yeah. I love that kind of stuff. Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. Are you a film guy?
So it depends what I'm into at the time. It depends what's on HBO or whatever.
But I'm saying, like, you know, would you consider, like, do films, what's your top three movies if you had a top three?
Probably Godfather.
That's good. There you go.
I put that
in. That's two for
Godfather. Worthy.
Yeah. I'd probably Pulp Fiction.
That's so funny. Holy you guys shit. The same person?
This is two, right? Yeah. Okay.
And
did you watch my episode?
No, I didn't.
Right.
All right. It's a movie like I watch over and over again. And not
yeah, right.
My wife's always like, why are you watching the same? How can you watch the same movie over and over
it's
again?
It's fantastic.
Right. And then I got to think of a comedy because I'm always the jokester in the band and always making jokes. But and I could always recite lines. I don't know. Maybe Caddyshack.
Oh, that's a good one. That's,
you know,
I love Caddyshack.
The documentary on that movie is wild.
Yeah, it is wild.
It is
like,
wild.
They had fun making that movie.
They did not have HR back then.
No, no. They did not.
Yeah. I mean, no, talk about a wild set.
Yeah. I got to throw this one in because I always recite the Spinal Tap.
Oh, my gosh. You know, did you see? Now, look, I'm reserved, but like it's on. Like it's on. They are filming Spinal Tap 2.
Yeah, and they've been talking about that for years.
Yeah, but Rob Reiner did it.
They're doing it.
They have clips out, and it looks exquisite.
Yeah. It should be. Those guys are funny.
Be.
Those
they're,
guys
yeah,
make
they're great
like Christopher
writers.
Guest is amazing. Like, I mean, they make good stuff.
Michael McKean,
Harry Shearer.
Yep. And Reiner,
and
I think
they're all
is
around.
Directing.
I mean, they're all alive.
So. Yeah. Yeah, and the DVD that came out like 10, 15 years ago, it's got almost 2 hours worth of unreleased material.
Right, the commentary.
It's hysterical.
It is.
It's the whole thing where they actually get somebody to fill in for Nigel when he quits.
The deleted scenes and stuff like that. Dude.
It's some great stuff.
It is that was ahead of its time.
It was.
I mean, yeah.
I remember on the DVD, the guy saying how the cinematographer was the same guy that did Led Zeppelin's Song Remains the Same.
Right.
And they're filming this whole thing and they're doing all these jokes and the cinematographer's like, I don't get it. This is what always happens.
Right, right. He couldn't conceptualize satire.
Right.
He's like, this isn't funny. I mean, this is
what happens.
Right.
That's awesome.
That's awesome, dude. Well, they're good picks.
That's three good picks.
Yeah, definitely, man. Yeah. All right. Well, look, Mitch, I appreciate you. Davis, do you have any other questions?
There was something. This is kind of a question for both of you because I was listening to it on the way here. It's a choose one scenario. Moby Dick or Bonzo's Mantra?
Oh. I knew you were going to say that.
That's my pick, Chris.
I knew you were going to say
100%. I think it just slams harder.
I think it does, but I don't know. I just feel like it might slam harder, but does it? Like live? Like on the album cuts?
That's really only that. There's not many versions of that other than Coda.
Right, because that's the last thing.
Yeah.
Right, and so I just don't know if I can. It's like it's great, but it's kind of not like, you know, I don't know if it can be greater than
Moby
Dick.
So you say Moby Dick.
I'm saying Moby Dick was done live.
Yeah.
For a while, and he did great things with it. Real quick, I do want to say, going back, I don't know why this just popped. I'll tell you why, because we're talking about Bonham. So you said that your first teacher was like, Peter, Chris, you know, let me show you a drummer. I have the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. Not me, but Marshall White. Mm-hmm. Remember how Marshall used to drum? So I drummed, and then Marshall started drumming.
Right.
He came to it at a different perspective. Just all of a sudden, Marshall was drumming as well. And one day we went to Marshall's trailer.
Right. Yeah.
Wherever the hell. In the middle of nowhere.
That
was like
way
a
out
farm.
Past New Windsor. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
we had good times
farm.
Out there.
Oh, and
shout out Marshall's
but
trailer.
But Marshall was like, dude, my drum instructor told me John Bonham sucks. and I was like, holy shit. And he's like, yeah, man. He's like, but look, you know, it's kind of weird because, like, you know, there's a lot of different kinds of drummings. And, you know, but Marshall was the first one that kind of made me be like, because you know how I am about Bonham.
Yep. I mean, that guy, that instructor is a fucking piece of shit.
Listen, there is something to
like,
this.
I don't know
though.
Who this man is.
You have
is.
To understand. Bonzo is a great, accessible drummer to make the masses interested in drums. But Bonzo would tell you that he is nothing compared to Louis Belson or Buddy Richard.
Or even Carmine Appice.
Or Neil Peart.
Because I was reading Carmine's book, and it was Carmine that, like, Bonzo used to say Carmine. He thought Carmine was God.
Because of Fudge, Vanilla Fudge?
Yeah, Vanilla Fudge was, Led Zeppelin was opening up for Fudge.
Right.
And Carmine got Bonzo his endorsements with Peisty and Ludwig. And you got to read this book, because there's some really, really cool shit in there. Mm-hmm. The thing that really blew me away was, so Carmine, you know, was with Rod Stewart, and he co-wrote Do You Think I'm Sexy?
Wow.
Yeah. So so he's getting, you know, he's to this day, he's
Rod
making
Stewart
all
Stewart royalties.
Right. He's getting that money. Mm-hmm. And when that song came out around the time Bonham died, Zeppelin asked Carmine to take his place.
Wow.
And Carmine's like, well, I'm flying high on this, you know, this number one hit that's all over the world, or play with Led Zeppelin.
Right.
And he couldn't, you know, he took playing with Rod Stewart.
Right.
I mean, but he was asked to be the drummer.
That's
and
crazy.
He would have been absolutely perfect.
He would have been perfect. Yeah. They're underrated drummers. Vinny and Carmine are underrated.
Imagine where Bonham would be today with technology if he was still around.
He probably wouldn't. He'd be playing the same.
Yeah, I feel like
he wouldn't evolve.
He'd be a wild man. Well, I think he would evolve. Actually, I do think he would evolve, because Chad Smith is a great player. And Chad Smith was originally a huge Bonham guy. And I mean, talk about a journeyman drummer. Like, he's a lifer. He seeks out different styles, tries to play them. Not that the Chili Peppers do that, but Chad Smith in the drumming world has done a lot of different kinds of seeking, and, you know, and so I do think Bonzo probably would have evolved. I mean, his son,
they could probably we could probably find out if they could do AI. They could just make Bonzo.
Well, we'll ask him next week something like that.
So you didn't answer Bonzo's or Moby.
You said I almost got
I'm not letting y'all talk.
That's a tough one. It is. I'll have to go with Moby.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's just more examples of it. I don't know. I just feel like it's got the legacy.
Though, yeah. No, it does. Know? And it's, but it's, I mean, as different as it is, it's always generally still the same. Like, it's the same.
Yeah. Bands. Yeah. It does have the same kind of structure.
I've just always been the Bonzo. It's always been my favorite.
Speaking of a PC, one last thing, Luke Zeitler, he like is friends, or is one of them dead?
Who?
Or are they both alive? The Apices.
They're both alive.
But that's who one of the people, like Luke went out to the Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp and hung out with Carmine Apice.
Well, we'll have him coming in. He's going to be up in next three episodes, something like that.
And was it? It was Cactus. It just a few years ago played at
Cactus.
They played at what's that place in Edgewood? The Garage. I can't remember.
In Edgewood, I don't know.
Anyway, but they played there.
Wow.
And then I met Carmine and took a picture with him, signed my book. I bought the book, he signed it and everything. We started talking.
That's awesome.
You know, because he's, as a drummer, he's actually got some really good, some published material on playing drums.
Right.
And it's a great, like that Realistic Rock book is one of my favorites.
Right. He's got good.
Yeah. Like good
academic
teachings.
Books.
Yeah. Great books.
Right. Nice.
And I told him, I was like, you know, that was the book that really got me into rock and roll after my teacher finally let me stop playing jazz and play rock and roll.
But you know, that does help, man. Like I said, when you said that that your first teacher was like, here's a book and a snare drum, that is the best medicine. Even though
absolutely
you want to go, the you know, the young cub wants the drum set, but you have to learn, you know, the art before you can actually
Lincoln's
ride.
Lincoln's been there. He's doing the snare. He's been doing it a couple of years now.
I'm so excited.
He almost wanted to stop, and he stuck with it, and now he likes it. Now he's back on. He's all in now.
That's perfect, man.
Yeah.
It'll be so great, dude.
I mean, looking back, I'm kind of glad he did it. I'm kind of glad he goes, you got to listen to it. Louis Belson, Buddy Rich. Those are the real musicians. And luckily, I saw Buddy Rich before he passed away.
Holy shit. How was that?
It was like a religious experience.
I'm sure.
I'm just sitting there going, yeah, maybe I'll just quit now.
Right.
You know, and he had his typical Buddy Rich attitude when he was playing. Yeah. They had a spotlight on him. It was the Meyerhoff that had a spotlight on him. And he started, yo, turn that crap off.
That's funny. It's too hot in here.
Yeah.
He's probably smoking.
That's awesome.
Well, wait. There was one more thing here. The Buddy Rich... Oh, there's a guy named John Crocken. Okay. And he lives across the bridge in Essex and he makes drumsticks. And he, I went down and interviewed this guy. This is before we do the show, before I knew we were going to do a show. The concept that originally was a book, I don't know. But I was seeking out some hardcore drum history, and I find this cat, John Crocken, and he makes incredible drumsticks. It's serious drumsticks for serious drummers. And he's an older man, and he was Chuck Stoitzman's protege. And Stoitzman drums and Stoitzman like educational materials and all this stuff. And like he knew Albert Mahler, like he learned the Mahler technique from, you know, and like he's got these great stories, man, about like, you know,
I don't know
Buddy Rich and Elvin Jones.
Yeah.
But like all these incredible old, you know, old school stories. But I just wanted to mention, because, you know, if you haven't heard of him, look him up on Facebook. Yeah, and he's a really interesting guy, dude.
Nice.
I just felt like, because you made me think of him, you know, and I just wanted to give him a mention. He's a good man. You know, he's getting older. Nice guy.
Did you take notes during that interview?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, this.
Oh,
right,
nice.
Here. Yeah, I'm not sure if you guys could see that.
Nice job.
That's Chuck Stoitzman, right?
That's awesome.
And John Crocken drumsticks. And John has serious history. Like he was, this is a Baltimore Sun article, and he was like featured in it as a young man,
nice,
like with Stoitzman and stuff. But he's a good man. Yeah, but you're a drummer.
I'd be afraid to break him.
Well, you're a lifer.
I didn't know you were out doing field work before.
I was. Listen, I was a seeking baby. This is like 2 years ago. I went to a diner in Essex and met this 77-year-old guy.
Damn.
I messaged him and I said, and literally I had this guy.
Did you take a tape recorder?
No, you know me. I think of everything. I get there. I have a pen.
He just went and interviewed somebody and just.
I had a pen. I mean, I did. I wrote. Look, I have, you know. But you should have seen this. Yeah, it was a great interview. That's good stuff. But I just thought, because you have such drum history in the area and stuff, you should know that there is a piece of drum history.
It's amazing, like how much stuff is around here that we really don't know of.
Yeah,
like
it's crazy.
Another good thing is, like, a good example is you'd be surprised, but there's actually a production company in this area that does Geico commercials.
Wow.
And and it's somebody I've met long time ago when I was working at Guitar Center and helped him build his studio. It's a private studio, beautiful studio. And every once in a while, he would, depending on the budget, would call me up to play on a Geico commercial.
That's so fun.
Right? Oh my God.
It's great. It's so much fun. You know,
you
have to fill out the contract and, you know, you get paid pretty well for it because they have these budgets. And I go to his studio and I just show up with a pair of sticks. He's got a kit there. He's got a beautiful Cavarotti snare kit.
Wow.
Is it all already written stuff, or have you come up with your role for a Geico commercial?
No, he just goes, here's the song, here's the idea I want, and then just come in and
figure
play.
Figure something out. Right.
And he'll spend like an hour just getting the sounds that he wants. And then two takes later, I'm done.
That's awesome.
That's cool.
Yeah, well, that's cool.
I mean, I've done some other commercials for him, but it's one of those, like, you watch TV and you're like, holy crap, that's me playing drums.
That's
the guy's riding his motorcycle. So
that's
like
cool.
He does. It's really cool because I've done some other things for Geico they've had some corporate things, and I've done sound for this and that and the other. But it's like kind of cool because they have three different people they use across the country. And if you notice, like, why is there a caveman, a Geico, and that money? It's three different groups that come up with these concepts.
Well, that's so funny. The caveman group. I mean, I've discovered music listening to Geico commercials. Like, the Remind Me song that I play on that little reel I made. There's a reason I bought that caveman art. There's lots of reasons. But that song I discovered on the Geico commercial when the caveman's on the airport escalator.
That's so
and
funny,
and he's just
Ryan.
Walking, and that's the song. Reichsop's playing in the background, and me and Amanda love that fucking
song. That's so funny. I mean,
it's cool. He's got some great stories of sometimes he, depending on the budget, he could buy us, you know, license a song, but he's a guitar player, and they also have a guy in the studio that also plays keys, so they'll come up with concepts they'll go, I don't have a drummer, and then
that's cool,
I just show up and play.
That's awesome, dude.
Yeah,
good awesome. For you, man.
Yeah.
Well, Mitch, is there anything else you want to plug or anything? I mean, you got.
I'm busy as heck. You know.
That's awesome. You well, sound busy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you're like I said, you're a lifer, and appreciate you. And maybe Stephen will. He will, because I know him. He loves. He's an idea man. So we'll definitely do a percussion Mitch sit-in run at definitely. Some point.
Oh, man, that'll be cool.
Yeah, it'll be awesome, dude.
I'm in. It was so much fun.
Now, we do have the drum set in the other room. We asked the drummers.
I request that you play it.
Yeah, we asked the drummers. Again, just groove, baby, or do whatever you feel comfortable with. Just a
it's
couple minutes.
It's to showcase you, though.
So. Yeah, it's just for a couple minutes, and, you know.
Like, I'll cut out all your, like,
yeah, the in-betweens. It's just,
you're fucking around.
It's just
only play.
That's what I want to hear.
Yeah, right. We're not going to make you look like an asshole.
No, I mix it all together. Yeah. I make it look cool.
All right, buddy. Well, I appreciate
you. Yeah. Thank you
so
much.
All right,
much.
Man. Stay sane, Baltimore.
Yep.
Awesome.
Thanks for listening, Baltimore. You can find us at www.sanitylounge.com or on Instagram at sanity.lounge.
Keep listening and subscribe.
Stay sane, Baltimore.